We're back with more of Lake Effect and Project Milwaukee Black and White. I'm Bonnie North. We're talking this week about race relations in Milwaukee, and one of the things we're doing is looking back at some seminal moments in the history of the black-white dynamic here. By the time the Milwaukee Brewers came into existence in 1970, baseball had been integrated for more than 20 years. In fact, before the Braves moved to Milwaukee in 1953, the Braves organization had already fielded its first African-American player. Sam Jethro played center field and won the Rookie of the Year award for the Boston Braves in 1950. But in those early years of integration, the road for black ball players could be and often was a bumpy one. When the then Boston Braves signed an African-American ball player from Mobile, Alabama, named Henry Aaron, they sent him to their farm team in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, to learn the ropes as a pro. Hank Aaron would go on to play for years for the Milwaukee and Atlanta Braves and would eventually set baseball's all-time home run record. Yet writer Jerry Poling tells Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke that the year in Eau Claire was a significant one for both Aaron and for the city itself. Poling is a newspaper editor in Eau Claire and the author of the book A Summer Up North. Poling says even though baseball had been integrated for 5 years by the time Aaron arrived in Wisconsin, it would be a stretch to say that blacks were accepted across baseball as a whole.
Yeah, it was really a transitional period there, and I think so many people look at 1947 as like, okay, blacks are in professional baseball now. But really, it was a long, drawn-out process of each city sort of going through their own little bit of integration and accepting blacks on their, you know, hometown teams. And it took a while, I think, for attitudes to change. In fact, I think it took a long time. And because for a while, there were blacks were, even in Eau Claire, there was only one or two on a team. And it was sort of like a trial. And a lot of times they would put two on a team so that the two guys could room together on the road because they were worried about maybe some implications there with a white player having a room with a black player. So, and there were some rumors of back in that time of there being quotas where teams would only take a certain number of black players, and that was it. And if they got too many, they thought there might be a backlash, so they would, you know, keep it to a certain number. All kinds of little things are going on back then, I think, that made it difficult where it still wasn't really a fair system for the black player, not only, you know, professionally, but I think socially, just still a difficult time in any of these cities. Especially when you look at, you know, Hank Aaron, I mean, he was not the first black player to play in Eau Claire. The first one was Billy Bruton in 1950, another player who went on to play for the Milwaukee Braves. So, in a sense, the color barrier had been broken in Eau Claire, but there still was that awkwardness between blacks and whites in Eau Claire that Hank had to deal with, and not only from a social interaction standpoint, but really part of his own, on a personal level, he had to get used to playing in a white city and on a white team for the first time. So it wasn't just whites getting used to blacks, it was vice versa in a lot of these cities. It was the black players, you know, having to, you know, find their own way in a city like Eau Claire that was 99.9% white.
Well, and you describe it as awkwardness, which is a significant difference than what the situation was like in the South, though. Was there, were there scenes of ugliness, or was it primarily just a sense for how unusual it was to see a black face in an overwhelmingly white place?
That's the sense I got from Aaron and a couple of other black players when they described what it was like playing Eau Claire, is that it wasn't really racism or racial epithets being, you know, shouted at them during games, or, you know, there might have been the occasional refusal of service at a restaurant or hotel, or implication that it might be there. But it wasn't really that, you know, in terms of the way it was in the South. It was more sort of this awkward social period where the black players in Eau Claire were essentially the only black people in town. There might have been a couple others. And the white people knew they were the players, and there was some staring going on that Aaron talked about in his book, I Had a Hammer. He said it was just, you know, it was uncomfortable for him. He was sort of like in a fishbowl, and everybody stared at him. And Wes Covington was, Aaron, Wes Covington, and Julius Bowers were the three black players on the 1952 team in Eau Claire. And there was sort of a sense that they, you know, they were the black guys in town, and they had to deal with people staring at them and kind of looking at them a little differently. But it wasn't really a sense that they were being treated poorly in any way, though.
What about on the field? I mean, the North was a different place for blacks to play in those days, but on the other hand, Hank Aaron was from Alabama, and plenty of other players in the Northern League were, I imagine, from the South. Were there issues of racial dynamics on the field itself?
I never came across any of that in talking to Aaron and doing the research for my book, that he had any problems with other players or coaches in the Northern League. He always said he was treated fairly by the manager in Eau Claire, and interestingly enough, the manager in Eau Claire that year, Bill Adair, in 1952, was from Mobile, Alabama, Hank Aaron's hometown. And Aaron, at first, when he heard that, he was concerned that having a white manager from Mobile, that he might be treated the way other blacks were treated in Mobile, but that wasn't the case. Bill Adair was a very fair man and treated the ball players all alike, Aaron said. And I really think on the field he had a very fair shake in terms of the organization and his teammates. You know, I don't remember hearing any stories of teammates not treating him like any other teammate, which, unlike Jackie Robinson, you know, we saw some of that. I mean, his own teammates and other opposing players weren't always the most gracious to him.
Were there other impacts that the one summer in Eau Claire had on Hank Aaron that extended off the baseball field? I know, for example, you're right that one of the lessons it taught him was about dealing with loneliness as a player, especially as he chased Babe Ruth.
I think so, yeah. In my opinion, the summer Hank Aaron had in Eau Claire was really set him up for the rest of his life in terms of how he handled himself. You know, he learned so many lessons in Eau Claire, and one of them was, you know, how to handle loneliness and being in the spotlight and being away from home and just relying on himself. He really grew up as a person that summer because, you know, when he had left home in February of that year, he was 17, or had just turned 18, I believe, and really pretty much a kid, and he'd never been away from home and never been away from his mom's cooking, any of that, and all of a sudden he's on the road for months at a time. So now here's a young man who basically has to learn whether he has the fortitude to fight through all that and say, okay, I'm strong enough to live in a white city, play in a white team, be away from home, 1,200, 1,500 miles away from home, make it on my own. And that's what he did that summer. He needed self-reliance to make it through that, but he also had to make it through in a place where he felt awkward and really even maybe a little scared at times, being in a white city and having never been in that environment before. So he really went through a kind of a trial by fire, in a sense, in his own mind of just being able to say, can I handle this? Can I do it? And I think by the middle of the summer, you know, personally, he kind of passed that test. He felt like he could handle it. There was a point early in the summer where he had injured another player accidentally on an opposing team, and actually I was kind of scared at that point of just being away from home and really homesick, and thought about coming home, and had actually called home and said he was going to quit. And his family told him that this was his shot and he, you know, really should just stick with it. And he did. And so really the challenge for him was to just overcome all those fears and realize he was a strong enough person to survive that situation. And then as he went forward in his life, I think that was the foundation for him to say, if I can handle that when I'm 17 years old in Eau Claire, being that far away from home and in a totally awkward environment, you know, I can handle these other things as I go forward in my life.
I gather people in Eau Claire think of that summer in a positive light as well, what it spoke about the city.
I think so. I think people in Eau Claire are very proud. You know, there's a statue of Henry at the stadium in Eau Claire, which still has a summer college team that plays here in the Northwoods League. And you know, it's really a source of pride, I think, for the city to think they, you know, they gave Henry a fair shake and treated him, you know, fairly, and they got one of an American icon on the road to success. And people in Eau Claire, I think, are very proud of that, that they, you know, they didn't shun him or treat him poorly. You know, they just treated him like another resident of Eau Claire in 1952. It's something here, I think, that people are very proud of, that we were good to him. And he's always said that, you know, that's where he got his start. And without having a good summer in Eau Claire, he said he didn't know what would have happened to him in his career. Because there were a lot of players in Henry's situation who were coming to the minor league teams in the Northern League, all around the Northern League at that time, who maybe didn't have the strength that Henry had, and they went through difficult times like Henry, and they did go home. There were a lot of blacks who it was too difficult, and they didn't survive what Henry did. I think he was good enough on the field that, and strong enough, had a solid family background, and his parents and the family were behind him. I think he had everything he really needed to just push through all that and get to the majors. And then once he got there, everybody knows he was, you know, a superstar within a couple of years. But yeah, those first couple of years for him, you know, Claire, and then the next year in Jacksonville in the Sally League was actually much harder for Henry, because that was breaking the color barrier in the South in that league, and that was not an easy time for him at all. It was much harder.
Jerry Poling, thank you so much for shining a light on that summer of 1952 for us.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed being on the show.
Jerry Poling is the assistant city editor of the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. He's the author of the book A Summer Up North, Henry Aaron and the Legend of Eau Claire Baseball, about Hank Aaron's year playing minor league baseball in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, published by the University of Wisconsin Press. He spoke with Mitch Tyke from Eau Claire. We should note that we invited Hank Aaron to appear on this program. Through his publicist, he politely declined. And that's all the time we have today. Our Project Milwaukee series continues all this week on both Lake Effect and in our daily news reports. On Wednesday, the WUWM Newsroom looks at the immigration of Latinos to Milwaukee and how their experience has been both similar to and different from that of blacks and Europeans. On Lake Effect, we'll continue the conversation with the editor of the Milwaukee Spanish Journal and the founder of a TV network that specifically addresses diversity. Also, race and the LGBT community and the segregation of the visual arts. All of our Project Milwaukee stories are available online at wuwm.com/projectmilwaukee. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for being with us today. Please join us again tomorrow for more of Lake Effect, 10 in the morning and 11 at night on 89.7 WUWM HD, Milwaukee Public Radio.